Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. He is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan, and Nancy Kane from the Harvard Business School is here to talk to us about resilience and leadership following tragedies like this. So, Nancy, you heard a little bit of this today. How do our leaders do?
You know, I think they're doing a good job. I mean, they're pointing to the diamonds in the tragic grass of what happened a year ago, right? They're pointing to people that have endured, you know, terrible disruption and loss, right? You know, I think of what one of my students said last year. We held this optional class the day after the marathon bombings to talk about leadership and what we might be able to see with, admittedly very foggy glasses, because we get more and more perspective, right, as these things, you know, as these things, we gain some distance and time on these kind of tragedies. And one of the students said, you know, he said, I think it's really, really, really important that we realize that there's going to be a lot of talk right now about the losses, about the people, the more than 250 people that were injured, the four people ultimately, Sean Collier hadn't yet been killed, that were killed in this, excluding, right, one of the brothers who allegedly perpetrated these crimes. He said, but remember that the people that were injured and lost a limb, they lost a limb for life, and they didn't. It's not just they who suffered. All the butterfly wings of connection, their family, their friends, their jobs, their employers, their sense of destiny, all those things are impacted. So this has great reverberation, which I think is something to think about. We're going to mark it today. We talked a lot about it a year ago, but it's important as part of the quilt, right, of human activity and connection, that we remember that there are lots of squares here that are sewn together, that extend beyond today and beyond the people that are being held up. That's the first comment. Second comment. So I think there's something else to be said here about leadership that's redemptive, and that is that every single person that pauses today anywhere in the world to think about this, you know, is a leader. The world is all about leaders of many shapes and sizes, many zip codes, many different warps and woofs. And so what can we each say to ourselves is something that I learned from this? I think that's a really interesting question. And I think it transcends resilience. And I think it transcends, you know, the moment of all those people, not just firefighters, not just cops, not just doctors. By the way, Atul Gawande, who many of our listeners will know about, the medical writer for the New Yorker, wrote a fascinating piece about a month after the tragedy about why Boston's hospitals were ready. And they were incredibly ready. And it goes back to P.S., training after September 11th.
Right.
So, you know, beyond all that service, all that, you know, instinctive rushing in to help, are like the runners who kept running to give blood, right? All those people that grabbed, like, you know, Jane Richard and scooped her up. And just the kind of service and, if you will, ordinary workaday nobility that we are each capable of, P.S., and feel better and more satisfied and more connected and more whole when we're in that place. That's a lesson for all of us. It's not something, I will tell you, that most of our public leaders are calling us to most days.
Well, you know, virtually every word you said, Nancy Kane, I agree with, and you have a greater sense of leadership in times of crisis through history. And I hate to be a broken record, but let me be maybe at least one, if not two more times today before we sign off at 3. We have an extra hour today on Boston Public Radio. I thought the leaders today connected quite well with real people. However, the single most important thing to me that was achieved today was by Adrian Haslett Davis. We've talked about this a couple of times. What do you do with all this grief? What do you do with all this sense of community? What do you do with all this feeling? And she talked, and I'm putting a few words in her mouth, but not many, about making April 15th a day of action for people, a day of service for people. Do something with this bond, this sense of our commitment to our fellow. We read a letter before, an email from a terrific man, the father of Stephen Odom, who was a young boy who was killed. Was it 2007, Marjorie? I can't remember. I think it was I'm not sure what year it was.
He was 13, and it was several years ago, so that sounds about right.
And his father, Ron and Kim Odomer's parents, both pastors, and Ron, his father, wrote and said that one of the reasons he really connected to what Adrian Haslett Davis said, apart from what I just mentioned, is that she mentioned that we, not only, just as this community has been there for the survivors to a great degree. She talked about how we all have to be there for other people who suffer other tragedies wherever they are. And I thought both that spirit and that call to action is really what leadership is about. What do you do? You don't just mourn the losses and you don't just celebrate the strength. You talk about what you do with all those feelings, and she did, which I thought was just terrific.
So I could not agree more, right? I could not agree more. I mean, David Foster Wallace, the American novelist and writer of, more readable prose than his fiction, once said that effective leaders are individuals that help us overcome the limitations of our own weaknesses and selfishness and fears and get us to do harder, better, more important things than we can get ourselves to do on our own. And think about for a second, that is just an astoundingly powerful definition. So what you're saying,
Jim... Where do you write that? I'm just curious.
In a Rolling Stone article following the first... many years ago, following the first John McCain campaign. Remember, long ago, before John McCain was for sale, there was a time. And it's called Up Simba is the article.
It's packaged
in one of his... Remember the Lobster is the name of the nonfiction essays. Remember the Lobster, interesting. And in any event, so I think what you know you're talking about, Jim, what Adrian's talking about is people want to do better, more important, harder things that we can get ourselves to do on our own. And so, you know, one of the things that, you know, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, some of the people that tried to move the world, right, did was to call us to service, right? Whether it was the Peace Corps. Right. Or whether it's Wendy Kopp and Teach for America, or whether it's Peter Gomes saying, you know, do something with your grief and turn around and offer some service to someone else, because that will not just be right for that other person. It will be for you as well. Begin in calamity, end in compassion. But we have to have people to call us to that because we don't default there all the time.
You know, you mentioned Robert Kennedy, and you brought our attention in something you sent us last night to the great moment where Robert Kennedy, I believe it was on the night of the assassination of Martin Luther King. Kennedy's in Indianapolis. Obviously, King was murdered in Memphis, Tennessee. We have a couple of seconds of the end of Robert Kennedy's speech.
Completely impromptu. We should tell our listeners this is impromptu. He's jotting this down, leaving the airport from flying to Indianapolis to give a campaign speech.
And by the way, the best of Joe Biden this afternoon, I said to Marjorie while I was speaking, was not the prepared text, which was fine, but when he was just talking from his heart.
Yeah.
Here is Robert Kennedy on the evening of the assassination
April 4th, 1968.
We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. And what dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
Takes your breath away.
It does.
That was extemporaneous.
What do you do with all this grief and this frustration? Here's what you do with it.
Right? How beautiful was that, by
so
the way.
Beautiful.
I couldn't get over his accent.
Let me say to our listeners, I consider this one of the greatest leadership speeches that I've ever encountered. You can YouTube it. It's on YouTube. And to see his face and to see him literally on this makeshift platform in this airport talking to this confused, sad, furious, you know, shocked crowd is to watch someone that's really about David Foster Wallace's definition of leadership.
What were the circumstances of that? You know, what you hear, we spoke to who was the chief of staff of George W. Bush, former state rep from Massachusetts, Andy Card.
Andy Card.
We spoke to Andy Card on the anniversary of 9/11, maybe 2 years ago, and he spoke about that great moment when George W. Bush, who was never praised as a particularly articulate soul, went atop the mountain of rubble. Obviously at ground zero with a fire with his arm around a firefighter and talked about, well, everybody remembers what he talked about. And Andy Card told us, he was his chief of staff at the time, that the president had been counseled not to say anything, either for reasons of security. In fact, I think he told us President Bush said to Andy Carr, should I say something? It wasn't like it was a planned thing. He just took to it. And those are the moments that stick with you, because it really, whether it's Robert Kennedy or George W. Bush at that moment,
or Biden today,
or Biden in the first 10 minutes when he's connecting. And we're going to play a little later a conversation we had this morning with CNN's John King, who reminded us that one of the reasons that Joe Biden is so able to speak from the heart like he does in moments of tragedy, which he did not mention today, of course, as he lost his own wife and kid when he was a 35-year-old newly elected United States senator in a car crash. Yes. I mean, it's just, it is, and those moments when it's from the heart, not from the script, are just unbelievably powerful.
So important. And I think one of the reasons they're so important and they're so powerful for us is, first of all, they voice what we're feeling and they make it, they normalize it, in effect. We know we're sharing that. We're not alone in this. Secondly, they are, in effect, saying to us, when they share that, and call us to something, you know, higher than just retaliation or fear, to go back to what Biden was saying, don't default to fear. They call us to the strength that we all have but aren't always called to. So one of the things I'm having my last class tomorrow, we're talking about Shackleton, I'm going to leave the students. We have to, it's customary at Harvard Business School to leave them with a kind of benediction, and they're graduating this year. And I'm going to say, remember, it's like, you know, it's like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. You have ruby slippers. We all have ruby slippers. We are stronger and better and more noble than we often realize day to day. And these moments and the opportunity you're talking about, Jim, and that Bobby Kennedy was talking about, to use that strength in service to something bigger than ourselves is really important, because that's when we get to spread the full wings of our humanity, right, and be who we're meant to be. And so I think that's part of the compelling nature of talking to our hearts.
Boy, would I like to be in that class,
you know,
should say.
We were talking before about who had been really good comforters in chief. And, we mentioned the great Ronald Reagan speech after the Challenger when he talked about, you know, slipping the surly bonds of Earth, touching the face of God thing. But then I was thinking while you were talking, FDR was a great comforter in chief, the great fireside chats. What is it? We have nothing to fear but
that's
fear
the
itself.
First inaugural, you know, shantytown right here on the mall, right? And where he's worried about social disruption and disorder because the economy's tanking so fast. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Nameless, shapeless, paralyzing fear. Yeah. So the role of leadership at every level, at the family level, right? I read in The Globe today about Bill Richard and what he did the day of the bombing when he had shrapnel in his leg. He said, you can't operate on me. I got to go deal with my son, right? This is Martin, Henry, Jane, and his wife.
They were Henry's all the older brother.
Oh, sorry. Henry's and so we're all, talk about strength and foresight and what comes first. We all have that capacity. And then we're called to use it, and we suddenly know something about ourselves that is truly about goodness and making the world and us in it better.
Yeah, but can I say, Nancy, I hate to rain on this. It's a beautiful parade, and I'm glad to be
and
part
go
of
ahead.
It.
And ruin it. Ruin it.
But I'm not criticizing others. I'm criticizing myself in this. We all have the attention spans of gnats. And, you know, today is an incredibly important day because it's the one-year anniversary. Yep. And obviously leading up to the one-year anniversary. And in the next 6 days, leading up to the first marathon since the horror of last April 15th. But the question to me is not what we say and do today
and this week.
And the next 6 days. Yes. The test for me is whether we do anything on April 22nd or we turn to the next huge story. And I'm not belittling the tragedy of the 239 people. Do we go back to CNN and 24/7 coverage of what the little submarine is doing, searching for the Malaysian airline? Do we go back to Dancing with the Stars? That, to me, is the biggest problem. It's not an absence. You know, there's a former Speaker of the House who died a couple of years ago, George Kavarian. Whenever he was criticized, I remember, you'll remember this line, Marjorie, when someone criticized him for his lack of leadership on a particular issue, I can't remember what it was, he says, the problem is not leadership, it's followership. And, you know, everybody laughed and everybody said, boy, I was trying to deflect attention away from him. But we are the problem. It is Pogo-esque, are we not? That we get totally engaged, totally committed, but if we're not directly affected, we move on to the next thing, no?
I don't think everyone will move on.
I don't think
so. I hope you're right.
I don't think so either. I think there are people that live it.
And if you dig down into the stories on the year since the Boston Marathon, there are hundreds of people that are turning the world around. Think about the mother of the two brothers, the Norden brothers.
Oh, we talked about
that. Oh, my God, what she's doing with her time.
But they're walking. They're walking the marathon route today, no, by the
family,
way,
right,
in the rain.
Yes, but she's only one degree of separation.
Yeah.
But think of all the people that she's brought with her
who are many degrees,
right? So, again, like, what's the line about from Margaret Mead? Never doubt the ability of a small group of concerned citizens to change the world. Indeed, nothing else ever has. This is what happens. It doesn't happen in the big room. It doesn't happen in the boardroom. It doesn't happen in the White House. It happens in pockets, little villages of people that are called to something bigger than themselves and discover in there the joy and humanity and potential, not only for the people they serve or the cause they serve, but for themselves.
Amen. That is huge. That is totally and
And I worry
true.
That in our media-obsessed age, we're only focusing on the big, and the big is kind of sometimes cynicism producing, when maybe it's all about the small and the real and the choices we make every day to show up with either our bigger self or our baser self. And we get to make that choice.
Well, I think you've hit it. I mean, I think that there are people, and we all know them in our own lives, whether personal friends or family or in some cases politicians, who they're always appealing to the better angels. You know,
that's what Lincoln called it,
yeah.
Right?
And I think that that's really true. I, unfortunately, am not one of them, but I do know some of those people in my own life, some of my closest friends. They're always thinking of the other person and making the lemon out of lemonade, to use an overused cliche.
Well, that's the challenge of the day.
That's the challenge of the year.
That is the challenge for all of us, Jim,
doesn't mean that other people...
Oh, it isn't that I don't want to, and I want to be inspired by Nancy, by Adrian Haslett-Davis, and by everybody else who spoke today quite eloquently.
But remember that it's not a toggle switch. We don't turn it on or turn, and that suddenly we're a good, you know, angelic person, right? It's constant choices, constant iteration, falling backwards and then dusting yourself off and trying again, right? Sometimes courage doesn't roar. Sometimes courage is that small voice waking up in the morning saying, I'm going to try again, damn it, today.
Hear that, Jim?
Wow. I'm going to try again today. Thanks to you and thanks to a few people we heard from the Hines.
Are we moving on here?
You have a thought to express?
No, I was just going to ask really quickly, because I know we're short on time, but I was going to ask you really quickly. The other great Comforter-in-Chief, of course, was Lincoln himself.
So here we go. So last night, April 14th is the anniversary of his shooting. He died on April 15th. So for me, this is a big day. So I decided, well, let's see if I can remember the really complicated middle paragraph of the Gettysburg Address, which is all about what we're talking about here. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did there. And here it is, Jim. It is for us the living to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who struggled here have thus far nobly advanced. It is for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that those dead shall not have died in vain. Think about Boston, 2014. That this nation under God, think about Biden, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Okay. I want to point out that Nancy Kaye said that from memory. She said that from memory.
Well, I had to make sure I could do it.
That was unbelievably impressive.
That's about reclamation, redemption, and we're all leaders.
You got me.
Okay.
I'm there, Nancy Kaye.
Nancy Kaye, inspiring to talk to you. Nancy Kaye is from the Harvard Business School. She is with us every Tuesday. But when we come back, we're going to take your calls at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970, about what we've heard today, about where we are in the aftermath of the bombings. You're listening to Boston Public Radio on 89.7 WGBH.
She is Marjorie Egan. You're saying, why are they...